That would be horrible. Ian, these guys do a great job. Thank you so much. And to use a golf metaphor, the verse that you shared is actually the essence of the message. And because I love that Jesus invitation, because I don't know about you, but there have been periods of time in my life where I absolutely knew that I was weak and I was heavy laden. And that promise that Jesus gives us, that he will give us rest. And well, I want to share with you a little bit. How many of you have ever heard me speak? Okay, you can leave. No, I'm just kidding. But I absolutely love this camp. Why? It's just, I love to be with a group of men. And I've been a pastor about 47 years. And but I got to share with you, for those who don't know who I am, because you need to understand a little context of why I'm passionate about the person of Jesus Christ. Now, for me, I grew up in a family, a very large family, but it wasn't because my mom had a lot of kids. It was because my mom had so many marriages and my dad had so many marriages. My mom was married 3 times. My dad was married 3 times. I have 12 stepbrothers and stepsisters, 7 sisters and 5 brothers. I'm the 13th child, but I was that oops, made a mistake child, in that my mom and dad were both married. They met in a bar, they became friends, and you can already guess what happened. My mom got pregnant with me. She tried to tell her husband, and he did the math. It was not possible, unless it was an immaculate conception. I doubt that. And so he booted her out of the house. He found out about my dad, told his wife. He got booted out of the house. And my mom and dad did what used to be called, if you're over 60, shacking up. And it was in the city of San Clemente. There was only about 2,000 population, and everybody knew about my mom and my dad. And so I was born out of this adulterous affair, and I was the unwanted child. And my dad took off when I was 4 and a half. He just couldn't handle the pressure anymore, and he just took off. No letters, no phone calls, nothing. He just took off. Then my mom married her 3rd husband, and that was my stepdad. And he was in the Korean War and had PTSD when they hadn't really diagnosed that. They called it shell shock. But he was an alcoholic who was incredibly abusive, emotionally, verbally, and physically abusive. So I was raised in that kind of home. And through my childhood, it was a beatdown. It was not pleasant whatsoever. And so for me, I was desperate. And so I started medicating my pain. What do I mean by that? I started drinking when I was in 3rd and 4th grade. All my older brothers and sisters drank, so I started drinking. And I found out when I drank, I didn't feel the pain so much. Then I started using drugs when I was in 5th and 6th grade. And by junior high, I'm now a drug addict and I'm a drug dealer, because that's how I supported my habit. All through high school, again, just a beat down. And I'm not feeling loved. I have no purpose. I have no future. And finally, in my end of my junior year, I said, I'm done. And so I decided to take my life. And so I remember standing on this roadside. It was a straightaway in Laguna Canyon in the city of Laguna Beach. And I'm standing there, and I'm going to jump in front of a semi truck. And I had just lost any sense of meaning or hope. And I will never forget when the semi-truck came around the bend and came down the straightaway. I start nudging out, and as he's coming down, he's doing about 65. He starts hitting his horn because he knows what I'm about to do. Something inside of me pulled me back. And I remember just slumping down on the ground as this truck just whoo, goes by. And I said these words, and I don't even know why. I said, God, help me. I had never prayed before. Why? Our family were atheists. No one believed in God. No one read the Bible. We never went to church, not at Easter, not at Christmas. I didn't understand anything about religion. And for me to just say, God, help me, I don't even know why I said it, but here's the thing. 2 weeks later, a friend of mine, Dave, he was on our football team, and he said, Eric, you got to come to this meeting at my house Wednesday night. I said, what kind of meeting? He said, it's just a meeting. Just come on. And I go, what is it? Tupperware? You know, Amway? What? You know? And he goes, no. There will be a lot of good-looking girls. I said, I am so there. So I had really bad motives, But here's what happens. I get to this house, I pull up, and there's all these kids from my high school. I knew them, but I never talked to them because who do druggies hang out with? Other druggies. And so none of these guys I hung out with. So I walk up, Dave greets me. He said, hey, come on in. He introduced me to a few people. And they said, we're just about getting to get started. And then he puts me up in front in this living room. And all of a sudden, everybody comes in, and I am pinned in. And I'm going, oh, dear God, what is this? Well, then this guy gets up. I found out he's a pastor. And he gets up, and he leads these songs. I have no clue what they are, because I'm listening to Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, you know, Three Dog Night. I'm listening to rock and roll, and he's singing Waddly Acha and you know, some camp songs, and I'm going, what in the world? So he gets done the singing, and by the way, nobody was singing. He was like doing solo and had a really bad voice. Felt bad for him. And then he played these games, and one of the games I'll never forget, and it's called the flower game. He picked the three best-looking gals, and he brings them up in front. And he says, now, you're going to go into a room, but we're going to be playing this game. Well, in the room, one of the gal leaders told them that they had to pick a flower that they love the most, whether it's a daisy or a pansy or whatever. But then what he did is he picked three guys, and he said, guys, here's the deal. One at a time, you know, you're going to go into the room, and I'm going to bring you out, and you're going to have a gal stand on there, and you're going to guess what is her favorite flower. And if you guess right, you get to kiss her right on the lips. Now, these were all good-looking girls. I'm thinking, I'd love to be in this game. And so he dismisses the guy. He brings out one gal, brings out one of the guys. Now, unbeknownst to the guys, the gals had a mouthful of flour. No matter what flour the guy guessed, she would spit the flour onto his face and he would look like a ghost. The only problem is there was too long a delay. And by the time the guy guessed, you know, rose, the gal went, and it was just like dough just went onto his face. And each guy did this and I'm just going, is this like a cult? You know, I have no clue. And so, you know, I'm thinking, what is this meeting? And then this guy, this pastor goes, hey, I'm going to share something with you. And he starts off with four questions. Now, think about my life and my journey. He says this, do you ever wonder why you were born? Oh, my gosh. I'm born out of an adulterous affair. I always wondered, why me? Why this? And then he says, do you ever wonder if you're loved? I had never felt love from my family or anyone. He said, do you ever wonder what your purpose is? I had nothing. And then he goes, do you ever wonder where you're going to go when you die? I mean, it was as if God just carved that message just for me. It is what many of us will call a divine appointment. I'm not sure how you got up here. I don't know how many times you've been here. I don't know if this is your first time, but here's what I know. No matter what, if you just have an open heart, God has something to say to you. I know that. Well, I knew he had something to say to me. And then this guy gives this 15-minute message, and I'm going to go a little longer, but he gave this 15-minute message, and it was the pure gospel. He talked to me about my sin. I never had used the word, but as soon as he defined the sin, I go, oh, that's so me. I'm a liar. I'm a cheat. I'm immoral. I'm a drug addict, drug dealer. You can't trust me. I'm not the guy your daughter should ever go out with. And so when he talked about sin, I had no problem. And then he said, and there is this distance, this chasm between you and God because God is a holy God. And I'm going, okay, I can imagine that. If he's God, he's greater than me. And he said, so here's what Jesus did. And then he talked about what Jesus did on the cross 2,000 years ago. And at the end of the message, he gave an invitation. And I love this because with a group of high schoolers, he said, I want you to all bow your heads and close your eyes. And here's what high schoolers do. They look like they're going to bow their head and close their eyes, but then they do this. They're looking for the notorious sinners that are in the room. Because then he says, I'm going to say a prayer, and I want you to raise your hand if you want to receive Jesus. So they're looking for them, and a bunch of them are looking at me. Do you think for a minute I'm going to go, oh, yeah, I'm the notorious sinner. No, 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 no. So the guy gives the invitation. Nobody raises their hand. And he goes, are you sure? Nobody raises their hand. But here's what happens. I go across the street in this cul-de-sac overlooking the city of Laguna, and I will remember the first prayer, the second prayer. First prayer was, God, help me. The second prayer was this. Jesus, if you are who that guy says you are, come into my life, forgive my sin, and give me eternal life. And he did. Now, I was expecting while I was in the car for the heavens to open up, for a light to come down, and for God to look at me and say, you are my beloved son. I am now well pleased with you. Nothing. I felt nothing. No lights, no angels singing, nothing. So I drove home, and I had a really cool car, an AMC Gremlin, but that's a whole nother story. Yeah, I couldn't afford, my drug dealing, I evidently wasn't that good. Anyway, pimp my ride. So I go home, and I remember my mom and dad just totally plastered. They're at the table, they're asleep. And I said goodnight, which they were asleep. And so I go into my room, go to sleep. I wake up in the morning. Typically, I'd go to my drawer and I'd get my drugs and I'd sell them that day. Well, I get my drugs. I don't know why. I went out in my backyard, dug a hole and buried them. And then I marked them I didn't do that. But I buried them. Now, even though we were atheists, we had this humongous white Bible. It was just huge. Nobody ever read it. And I thought, man, that guy had a Bible. I had never read one. And so I had this white Bible, and I took it to school with me. Come on. So I'm carrying this honking white Bible, and it breaks. You know, at lunch break, guys would come up to buy drugs. And so I had this Bible sitting next to me. Guys would look at the Bible and thought, oh, that's creative. They thought I had carved out the Bible and put my drugs in it. And I said, oh, no, no, no. I found Jesus. And guys are going, you what? And I said, no, last night I found Jesus. One of the guys says, was he lost? But here's the deal. That started ministry for me. See, nobody told me evangelism would be difficult. Nobody told me evangelism that I should somehow be ashamed of the gospel. And that is where the call happened for me. And I will tell you, oh, thank you. That's awful nice of you. But honestly, I had the privilege of the next year and a half, this pastor that led me to Jesus discipled me. Most men have never been discipled. And what he taught me was stuff that I have used throughout my life. I have been all about the gospel. I have been all about learning from Jesus. That verse, come to me all who are weak and heavy laden, and I will what? Give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon me, learn from me. For my yoke is what? Easy, and my burden is light. And I have found that to be true. So what he says is, come to me and learn from me. This weekend, the series we're going to do is Life Lessons by the Lake. Why the lake? I don't know about you. When I come up to Hume Lake, and I've been coming for over 3 decades, some of you have been coming since the time of Jesus. I don't know. Do we have any more lamps or lures? No. Anyway, so some of you have been coming up a long time. Here's what I have found. 47 years into this journey, I'm still learning. I'm still growing. Jesus is still teaching me things. And so we're going to do this Life Lessons, you know, by the lake. Now, we're not going to be at Lake Hume because I'm going to take you to what? I call it Galilee Lake. They call it a sea, the Sea of Galilee. How many of you have ever been to the Sea of Galilee? Yeah, it's a sea it's actually a lake with a lot of publicity because it's not that big. If you sit in the middle on a boat, you can see all the shore, but it's really a lake. But isn't it interesting that Jesus' ministry, his base of operations, was in Capernaum? Now, what is Capernaum? Seriously. Anybody ever been to Barstow? Oh, you laugh. Oh, yeah, I've been to Barstow. Been to the McDonald's. But seriously, what is Barstow? Like, would you ever think, like, how many of you are business leaders here? None? Do any of you work? Oh, no, no, we fish for a living. So here's the deal. If you're going to start a business, you would never start it in Barstow. Jesus turn the whole religious land upside down. Why? First of all, he's a rabbi, and rabbis typically had disciples or students come to them pleading, would you take me? And then they would have to perform, and the rabbi would discern, you know, is this guy good or not? But Jesus, he didn't wait for people to come to him. He chose his disciples. And who did he choose? The learned? Did he choose any Pharisees? Nope. Sadducees? Nope. Zealots? Nope. Well, one. But here's the thing. He chose unlearned men. He chose guys that wouldn't normally get along. I mean, you had a tax collector, and they were despised. Why? Because Rome's occupation. Tax collectors were like traitors. They were taking taxes from the Jews, and they were Jewish, and then they would skim off the top and give 70% to the Roman government. They were hated, and then Jesus chose a zealot who hated that, but he brought them together and unified them. See, he did it like no one else. But here's the interesting thing. He chose his base of operation, Capernaum. Now, when you go to Capernaum today, you can see it's all hewn out. Archaeologists have done a great job. It is a small fishing village. They estimate maybe 800 to 1,000 in population. And that's where Jesus' base of operations. And he stayed down at the Sea of Galilee most of the time. And tonight, if you have your Bibles, I'd love to have you open up to Matthew chapter 4. Because we're going to hit one of the first life lessons. And again, what Jesus did, because again, most of the men he was working with were illiterate. They were unlearned men. So what did he have to do? He taught them by example. He taught them with word pictures. He taught, remember one of the phrases used of Jesus? He taught like no one else. He teaches like no one else. Why? As a rabbi, he used methodologies that were not similar to others. And so he taught like no other rabbis. And so he constantly took them on these life lessons. And so this first one that we look at is early on in his ministry. And it's where this storm comes up. We're going to read the passage. And then I want you to think about, what's he teaching them here? See, so they had been ministering all day. And here's how the story goes. As evening came, Mark 4, 35 through 41. I'm sorry. So starting in Mark 4, verse 35, he says, as evening came, they had been ministering all day long, Jesus said to his disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. And it wouldn't take that long, but it was going to be a journey. So they took Jesus in the boat, and they started out, leaving the crowds behind. But soon, verse 37, a fierce storm or squall came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. Now Jesus was sleeping in the stern or the back of the boat, and his head was on a cushion. The disciples woke him up shouting, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and he said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. Then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? The disciples were absolutely terrified. Who is this man? They asked each other. Even the wind and the waves obey him. So we have this short little story, but it is packed with things in terms of life lessons. The first thing is, notice that Jesus invited them to follow him. And you know, when I started out and my youth pastor said, you know, Jesus is calling you to follow him. By the way, that's one of the best definitions of a disciple, is a follower. In fact, today, when people ask me, what religion, you know, are you? I just say, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. Because if you say Christian today, it is a loaded term. And people have a lot of baggage. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't use it. I don't. Because I love to say I am a follower of Jesus Christ because it creates a next question. What do you mean by that? Follower, you know, and so I have something, you know, you know, could you come up and give this talk? Yeah, I rented these lips. They are not working. Thank you, Jason. A launching pad from which I can have a discussion. And so Jesus invites them into the boat, and they're about to go on an adventure. And my youth pastor said, Eric, he said, here's the deal. You're headed off to UCLA to be a structural engineer. He goes, I think God's calling you into the ministry. I've watched you. I've listened to you. You are a sponge. You're going to be a pastor. Now, again, this is my calling. I'm not looking at any of you. But he says, Jesus is calling you into the adventure that you can't even imagine. And I will tell you, 47 years later, absolutely. It's been an adventure with my family, with my friends, with my community, with the world. The things that God has led me into, just like he is. I see some of you doing this. It's an adventure. Jesus calls them into the boat. He just says, now, if they had stayed back and said, it's a little dark right now. I don't really need to go to the other part. They would have missed the adventure, and they would have missed the life lessons. So often, I walk alongside of other men in our church, and some have a spirit of timidity. They're afraid of stepping out. They're afraid of sharing their faith. They're afraid of serving. They're afraid of worship. They have this timidity. But as Paul said to Timothy, God did not give you a spirit of timidity, but a power, love, a sound mind. We are men. Boys step back. Men step in. In fact, thank you. You're going to get me going. So here's the deal. The term male, listen to it. The term male, next time your wife says, why are you always trying to fix things? Just say, because I'm a man. Because the term male means one who steps into and makes order out of chaos. We solve problems. We fix things. We step into difficult things. That's what Jesus did with the disciples. He was calling them into the adventure. The Christian adventure, the Christian journey is not an easy situation. It is not. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, part C of the verse, here's what it says. Considering the Christian adventure or journey, he said, run with endurance the race that is set before you. Every one of us in this room is in a race. I don't care how old you are, whether you're 8, whether you're 80, doesn't matter. He says, I've got you in a race. But here's the deal. The Greek word for race is the Greek word agonos, from which we get the English word agony. So what we're being called into in this adventure is difficult. It is not for the faint of heart. So Jesus calls them into this adventure. But he's calling you and I into an adventure. And here's the beautiful thing. The moment that somebody finally says, I surrender. God, I'm going to do what you want me to do. I remember a friend of mine who was in construction. Actually, he was in technology, but he loved construction. And all of a sudden, God gave him a vision for what he could do in Mexico. And he went on his first Mexico trip and just observed. And here was the beautiful thing. While he was down there, he heard that a lot of people down there cannot afford a house, even the smallest of home. And they live in these dilapidated shacks. And he said, well, I do construction. I could lead a team. And so years ago, he started his first house build. To date, he's done 111 houses. Why? God called him into an adventure. God called him in the adventure. But he said yes. So the first thing we learn is Jesus calls us into an adventure. What's he calling into you? By the way, I was in Israel about 2 years ago, and I at the time was 63. I'd been in ministry 45 years. I thought, you know, maybe it's time to retire. And so I get to Israel, and God speaks to me pretty clearly. And because I had kind of thought that I was washed up, that I was irrelevant. And I remember one time journaling by the Galilee, Sea of Galilee, and God said, who said you were irrelevant? I was saying it to myself. And then I get to Gideon Springs, and I don't know if you remember the story of Gideon against the Midianites, and all the people of Israel are in fear because the Midianites have this army that is 10 times the amount of warriors they had. And an angel appeared to Gideon while he's in a wine press hiding. And he says, mighty warrior, calls out a name, and Gideon had not fought a battle. And in that place, we encourage people to journal and say, what's the name God's been trying to give to you that you've been pushing back on? And I thought, well, I sent all the people on my bus to go journal. I better journal. So I started journaling. And I had a few names that came up. And then the last one, I started to weep. Because the name was this, Powerful Finisher. And I knew when that name came that I had believed a lie about myself, that God had more of an adventure to me. Because if I had retired, I would have never helped lead our church through what it did. In fact, if I had retired, I ended up taking a church and leading a church through a disastrous problem or situation that happened. The church had lost their senior pastor, leukemia, had hired his son, and his son tragically took his life. And 2 years later, and they asked me to be the interim pastor, and my church lent me to that church for a year. I would have never had the privilege of helping be a part of that healing had I retired. I don't care what age you are. God has got an adventure, and he's calling you into. I now have a wedding ring that says Powerful Finisher. I'm going to keep going until God tells me not to or he takes me home. I'm hoping it's not this weekend, but he could take me home. So Jesus calls them out. Secondly, what happens as soon as they leave the shore and they start going onto the sea? What happens? Storm. Okay, guys, did anybody predict the pandemic? I don't think any of us in our wildest imaginations would have ever thought we would have gone through a pandemic. In fact, come on, be honest. When the pandemic hit, I don't know about your pastor. I remember my pastor. You know what? We'll try to get open when? Easter. Like, oh, this will last about a month. You know, we'll have masks. Yeah, we'll separate, all that. It'll last about a month. And we're kind of still going. But here's the thing. Storms come, don't they? And by the way, when you're on the Sea of Galilee, it is quite the lake or sea. And because it'll be perfectly calm. And then all of a sudden, these winds will come in. And there's all of a sudden white caps. Now, in this story, it said the waves started crashing up over the boat. Now, I know you probably watched the show The Deadliest Catch. Okay, this is not a fishing boat like that. It's not 110 feet. If you look at a fishing boat at the time of the first century, how high off the ground would it be? Yeah, it is about 2.5, 3 feet. They've got one excavated, it's in a museum, and it's at the time of Jesus. And I mean, those waves only had to be about 3 feet high to crash up over the boat. So I didn't want you to have this thought of the Sea of Galilee, 10-foot swells. You know, I've seen movies or renderings of it. You're just going, no, that's not it. But it was enough to scare these apostles. Obviously, they had fear. Why? Because they didn't swim. They're in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Guys, do storms come? Yes. Yeah. Here's what I know. Some of you just got out of a storm and you're doing pretty good. You're feeling good. Some of you are about to head into a storm and you don't even know it. Some of you, when you came up this weekend, are in a storm. Anybody here, honestly, in a storm right now? You don't have to tell what it is. Just raise your hand. Yeah. I would raise mine. I'm dealing with too much grief. My heart is heavy. I've buried too many people, and now I've buried too many family members. And so storms hit. Storms are a part of life. But here's what's so beautiful. Jesus invites the apostles to join him in this adventure, and then a storm comes. Jesus didn't hop out of the boat, because did you know he can walk on water? Jesus didn't go, hey guys, I'm taking off. You guys have a good trip. No, he's right there in the boat with him. And so not only does Jesus call us into an adventure, but here's what he doesn't promise, the absence of storms. You know, every one of us has a story of pain. You could sit down and say, tell me your story. And some of you would share a story and it would bring weeping because it's been so hard. But here's the thing is, God's been in it all the way. He's redeeming your story. It's a powerful story. He's been with you in the story. And so the beautiful thing is God invites you into an adventure. But secondly, he doesn't tell you there's not going to be storms. And so when we're in a storm, know that he's there. But sometimes we don't sense it. I've been walking with Jesus a long time, but here's a third thing that we learn. And that is, sometimes Jesus is silent. Because, you know, here this storm hits. And again, the disciples are a little bit fearful. I remember I was in Uganda and I had this pastor in one of these tin boats with a little engine, and we're going across Lake Victoria, and we're going, and I decide to kind of cause a little ruckus. He had his family and stuff like that, and I got on the edge of the boat and I start doing this, and I mean, it looks like we're gonna go out. And I've never seen a pastor so mad in my entire life. Now, this is a friend of mine. This is a guy, I love him. And he just looks at me and said, "Stop." I just stopped. It was like the voice of God. And but he goes, "None of my family know how to swim." And he was mad. And I went, whoa. Well, you'd imagine the apostles. Jesus invites them in the boat. They're headed across the street, the sea. The storm comes, and where is Jesus? He's on the back of the boat, the stern, and what's he doing?
Taking a nap.
He is so tired. By the way, Jesus was 100% God, but he was also 100% man. He's the only God-man who has ever existed. He was asleep because he was tired. Now, here's the deal. There's a little thing to understand. In the midst of their fear, in the midst of the storm, Jesus doesn't seem to be near. He doesn't even seem to be aware of what the apostles are going through. I want to share with you, because I think it will resonate with many of you. There are times God is silent in your pain. You're wondering, did you take your eyes off of me? Did you stop your protective hand? Why did you let this go through? Remember the story of Lazarus? Mary and Martha sent word to Jesus. He was off ministering. "Hey, your friend Lazarus is dying. Come quickly." And he doesn't come. And Lazarus dies. See, the silence of God, it's deafening. Well, when Jesus finally gets into Bethany, Martha goes out away from the mourners. And her question is what you and I ask. "Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now you can substitute your story. "Jesus, if you had had your eye on the wheel. Jesus, if you had seen what was going to go on, my business wouldn't have failed. I wouldn't have been, scandalized. I wouldn't have had my wife die." And you can fill it in. What Martha did, so did Mary. Mary said, "Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." There are times God is silent. So this adventure that Jesus has you on, there are storms, and sometimes the storms don't have any definition. There's no sense of why. They just come. You know, there's a verse I love, and that is out of 1 Corinthians 13. It says this: "You and I see through a glass dimly. One day we'll see Jesus face to face, and all things will become clear." See, there are things we just can't explain. And as you mature in Christ, less and less do you have to ask why. You just say, "God, what? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to react? What do you want me to do?" You just step up. The fourth thing I see from the story is the issue of the cry for help. You know, what did the disciples do? They went to Jesus, and instead of just letting him sleep, what did they say? "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" In other words, we're going to die. This is what prayer is about. I love that most of our prayers are desperation prayers. Most of our prayers are, "God, I can't move this mountain. God, I can't find a breakthrough. God, I need you too." We all, in fact, when we were in this room, that's what we did. We prayed together as a worship band, as a speaker, and as a staff. "God, there's things you can do that we cannot do." Prayer is this beautiful thing. I follow me. It takes God from being just majestic, transcendent, all-powerful, all-knowing, and it draws him right into the situation. It brings God right into the center. So they prayed, and Jesus woke up. And I love in another version his response. Now, in this version, it says, "Silence, be still." In other words, he looked out at the water. But in another version, there's a Greek phrase, and it says, "being amused." He was amused at their fear because did they not know they were with God? Did they not yet know who they were with? He was not going to let them drown. So he was amused, and then he says, hush, be still, and then poosh. It was just like glass. Like, I love this lake sometimes when you wake up in the morning, go out, maybe you're going to read, have devotions, whatever, and it's just like glass. See those mountains in the backdrop? It's just beautiful. It was like glass. But how did it get that way? They cried out, and God answered. They cried out. So in our adventure, when storms come, we cry out. Why? Because we have a God whose burden is easy. It's light. He calls us into obedience, calls us into surrender. So the final thing is the learnings. Because look at what it said. Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. Then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? In other words, don't you know who I am? Don't you believe in who I am? The disciples were absolutely terrified. Who is this man? They asked each other. Even the wind and the waves obey him. Do you think they ever forgot this circumstance where God came through? They thought they were going to perish, and he caused the seas to be still. Every one of us has these stories where God comes in and enters into an impossible situation. I remember when my wife and I, we wanted to start a family after seminary, and that's always a nice thing to start a family. And so my wife gets pregnant. So we decide we're going to announce it to our youth group. And so back then, do you remember the you want to help me with this word? What do they call them? The pictures of your baby. The ultrasound. Thank you. You're supposed to help me, Jason. You know, as I've gotten older, the memory goes. So the ultrasound, it looks like a little peanut. There's no definition. So I put it up on the screen and I said, I want you to know the greatest thing has happened to me. And I put it up on the screen and kids are looking at it like, what in the world? And I said, we're having a baby. They're like, yeah. Well, then what happens is my wife 3 days later says, I'm not feeling well. We have to go to the doctor. And in one visit, the doctor said, you've lost the baby. It's a miscarriage. The storm. See, we were going to have a family. It was our first. And I had always prayed, God, give me a godly woman. And he did. God, give me a family. Give me kids. Let me love my kids like I was never loved. And my first baby dies. Not my plan. And then we had a lot of people, the nice people in the church, that go, oh, God will give you another one. Or that one just wasn't meant to be. Oh, you got to birth one into heaven right away. By the way, be careful of what you say. That neither one of those were comforting. The best comfort I got was a guy that came to my house and said nothing. Yeah. He just sat with me as I cried. Yeah. So here's the deal. We went through 4 years of infertility. And then the elders of our church, we were on a retreat just like this, elders and pastors. And they didn't do this as a practice in our church, where the elders would be available to anoint with oil and pray over people. But they asked if any of the pastors needed prayer, and I raised my hand and in tears said, my wife and I want to have a child, but the doctor said we never will. And so they anointed us with oil, and that night my son was conceived. Now, he's not here right now, and he hates that story. Because no kids want to know that their parents are having, you know, that thing that they do. Anyway, starting a family. But here's the thing. God gave us our son. And then 18 months later, God gave us our daughter. And then we had a few more miscarriages. We know that we have two kids God intended. Why? It's always an adventure. Never the way I think it's going to go. About 90% of my life never happened the way I thought. But it happened the way Jesus caused it to go. He said, come and follow me. Come and follow me. Guys, I don't know where you're at in your spiritual journey. I don't know if things have gotten complacent in your heart. I've been there before. Maybe you've been disobedient. I've been there before. Maybe you've never started your journey. It could change this weekend. Who knows? But here's what I know. Jesus is always calling us into the adventure. And all we got to do is open up our eyes and our ears to what that adventure is. So as we start this weekend, I am so glad that we're going to be able to fish. I know that there's probably a 50-pounder somebody's going to get, and I just want you to give it to me. Yeah, poor pastor that needs some fish. But in all honesty, we're going to fish, we're going to have fun, we're going to do whatever. But here's what I don't want you to miss: God's voice in your life, God's directive for you. Because there's always a next, always a next. Let's pray. So God, thank you. Thank you for tonight. Thank you that as we start out this weekend, we're not just going to be friends, we're going to be family. As men, we're just going to enjoy what you have for us. All the food, all the beverage, all the fishing, all the laughter, the stories, the messages, the worship, all of this is for our good. And so God, may we just be open to who you are and what you want to do in our lives after this camp. God, you are a good God. You're always full of surprises. You're calling us to an adventure, and we're all in. And all of men's, all the men in here said, amen. Thanks, guys.